What's up, you guys? I'm Andrea.
And I'm Haley.
And you're listening to Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Or any updates, right?
No, I know a lot of people have been asking about the University of Idaho case, and we've been updating on our Instagram, but I don't think we're going to talk about it on the podcast until there's
more information.
Yeah.
Factual, solidified information.
Exactly. A lot of it is speculation, or the police haven't said that much, and I feel like the things that they've said are getting twisted really easily, so I just don't want to, like, spread anything that's wrong, but we are sharing updates on our Instagram and TikTok. So if you guys want the most recent updates, go check those out.
Okay. Well, with that being said, I'm going to just dive into this week's case, or my case for this week. And I'm covering Mari Ann Bachmeier.
Okay.
I'm going to say that wrong. Case.
Mari Ann.
Okay. It's spelled like Marianne, how we would say it in the United States, but it's German, so.
Right. Okay. Mari Ann.
And she is known as Germany's revenge mother.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes. I don't know this at all.
This actually, hold on. Somebody suggested this case, and that's why I decided to do it, because we had just gotten the case suggestion. Maybe I made that up. Maybe I had a dream. I don't know.
All right.
No one knows, including me.
But
nonetheless, I'm sharing with you this story today.
Okay.
On March 6th, 1981, Mari Ann Bachmeier calmly walked into a crowded courtroom and opened fire on 35-year-old sex offender Klaus Grabowski, who was on trial for the murder of Marianne's 7-year-old daughter, Anna.
Oh, my God.
So, Mari Ann was born on June 3rd, 1950. She grew up in Sarstedt, Germany. Her parents were refugees from West Prussia.
Okay.
And her father was a member of the SS during World War II.
Okay.
Mari Ann's parents were very strict and religious when she was growing up. But despite this, her father had quite the drinking problem and spent a lot of his time in local bars. He could be very reactive and become violent, so their household was volatile, to say the least.
That's so sad.
I know. When Mari Ann was a child, her parents eventually divorced. It's unclear exactly when this happened, but in 1966, Mari Ann's mother remarried.
Okay.
Mari Ann did not have a good relationship with her new stepfather, and her mother often blamed her for the issues in the home, which is terrible. Ooh. It's never the child's fault, and even if they are problematic, they're children.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh.
And as a result, her mother kicked her out of their home.
Wait, how old was she?
She was 16. Yeah.
Oh.
So you can imagine how abandoned, alone, and unloved she must have felt.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
Around this time was when Mari Ann had her first child, a daughter, whom she decided to give up for adoption because she felt she was not prepared for the task of being a single teen mother.
Okay.
Which I do commend her for that, because that's got to be a hard decision and not one that a 16-year-old girl should have to make.
Yeah, absolutely.
At 18 years old, she found herself to be pregnant again. This time was by her serious high school boyfriend. Right before she was about to give birth to her second child, Mari Ann was sexually assaulted at a nightclub.
Oh my God.
While she was freaking pregnant. Like, jeez. What the hell? Soon after this, her relationship with her boyfriend began to fall apart. Dealing with the breakup and trauma from the rape, Mari Ann felt that for the sake of her child, she would put her up for adoption as well.
Wow.
I know. After this, Marianne left high school and began working as a waitress at a local bar and restaurant called Tapasa. And there she met the bar's manager, Christian Berthold. Everyone that knew Marianne knew that she was a spitfire. She was charismatic and she was stunningly beautiful. Aww. She had a little bit of a temper, but people were naturally drawn to her. And it did not take long for Christian to be drawn to her as well, and soon the two began dating.
Okay.
When Marianne was 22, she found out that she was again pregnant, and this time she decided she was in a better place and better prepared to raise her third daughter. Christian, on the other hand, was not on board with being a father and not on board with being in a committed relationship, but despite all this, Marianne chose to keep her daughter anyway. Anna Bachmeier was born on November 14th, 1972. After the birth of Anna, which was very traumatic for her, Marianne decided she did not want to bear any more children, and she actually had a tubal procedure ensuring that she would not get pregnant again.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, which is crazy to be so young and do that.
Yeah.
I know that that happens, especially when you've had multiple children. But I just can't imagine being that young and making that big of a decision.
Yeah. And I feel like that's a very, like, it must have been very difficult and traumatizing and just all of that. Like that, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. At first, Marianne was absolutely smitten with her daughter. But it didn't take long for the stress of being a young single mom to wear on her.
Yeah.
She didn't have the help from family or friends. You know, they say it takes a village to raise a child. She did not have that. And she was forced to bring Anna to work with her at the bar.
Okay.
She often neglected Anna, and Anna was forced to fend for herself a lot of the time. The patrons at the bar loved interacting with the little girl, who they described as a free spirit, much like her mother.
Aw.
And they would say, like, sometimes they would come in and she would be, like, asleep on the bar, like, in a booth or something, just because, like, her mom worked nights and she's a little kid. So, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I just want to veg out on my phone and play a fun game. Recently, I discovered June's Journey, which is a hidden object mystery game, and I am obsessed. I am 3 chapters in, and I cannot put it down.
I've been loving it, too, because not only does it bring out my inner detective, but eventually I'll be able to uncover the mystery behind the case. You play the game as June Parker, a young woman in the 1920s trying to solve her own sister's murder. And the clues that you start finding all point to June's family having some deep, dark secrets.
During the game, you get to create your own estate, which appeals to my inner interior designer. But before we ruin too much for you guys, you have to download June's Journey for yourself. It's free today on iOS and Android devices.
Check out the link to download June's Journey in the show notes of this episode.
At one point, Marianne had spoke to an older couple that frequented Tapasa and asked if they would be willing to temporarily foster Anna while she tried to get her life and her priorities in order.
Wow, good for her, making like very difficult decisions, but doing what's best for, I mean, for all of her children. She keeps doing what's best for them.
Right. And I commend her for that. I mean, again, it's like, I can't imagine being that young and being single and raising, you know, a child and trying to work at a bar at night. And I just can't imagine. But this actually never happened. And Anna just stayed with her mom for the most part.
Okay.
Anna was sort of forced to raise herself as she got older. She would stay up all night. You know, her mother worked at night and partied after work. So they would sleep most of the day away. Sometimes when Marianne was still sleeping, Anna would go outside and play, and she would talk to the neighbors, and pretty much everyone in the area knew who little Anna was.
Aw.
Yeah. On May 5th, 1980, Anna decided not to attend school that day to spite her mother.
Okay.
The two had gotten into a little spat the day before, and Anna's feelings were still hurt.
Okay.
Instead, Anna decided to walk over to her friend's house, who lived just a few blocks away. And keep in mind that Anna at this time is only 7 years old.
Right. She's still a baby.
She's still a little baby, I know. When she arrived at her friend's house, her friend had already left for school, so Anna decided to play outside and talk to the neighbors like she normally would do. This was nothing new for her, and she just felt very comfortable doing so. When Mari Ann woke up for the day, she assumed Anna was already at school, so she got up, got ready, because she had a photo shoot and an interview with a local newspaper about her car.
Okay.
So she drove a very hippied out Volkswagen van covered in art.
Oh my gosh.
Which is like super cool.
Yeah, I love that.
I know. Because I guess the hippie movement was still kind of going strong in Germany in the 70s.
Okay.
So she was all about it. Had the Volkswagen all decked out. After her interview, she returned home and she was surprised to see that Anna was still not there. Marianne left her house and went out looking for her daughter, but by dark, when Anna was still missing, she decided to call the police and report her daughter missing.
Oh no.
Marianne hoped that Anna was just hiding out with some friends since the two of them had had the argument the day before.
Right.
So she called around to all of Anna's friends, and unfortunately not a single one of them had seen Anna or knew where she was.
So the friend's house that she had gone to was like the parents not home?
I guess no one was home. Yeah, because there was no one had seen her that day.
Okay.
What soon would be uncovered about the little girl would shake and horrify their community. The day that Anna skipped school, Anna had been outside playing like she often did when she saw her neighbor, Klaus Grabowski. Anna knew Grabowski because she had spoken to him several times and had played outside with his cat. That day, she saw him and asked if she could, again, play with his cat. This time, Grabowski's cat was inside his apartment. So the two of them walked upstairs.
Okay.
Grabowski then sexually assaulted and strangled 7-year-old Anna to death.
Oh my God.
And in the court documents, he goes into a lot more detail, which I'm absolutely not going to go into here. But he had her for several hours before she was murdered.
Okay.
A few hours later, when Grabowski's live-in fiance arrived back at their apartment, he confessed to the ghastly act that he had just committed.
Oh, wow.
She immediately left their apartment and went and notified police.
Okay, good.
While she was gone, Grabowski put Anna's body into a box and took her down to the canal and buried her on the bank. Mm. Now, this was not Grabowski's first run-in with the law. He was already a convicted sex offender.
Oh my God.
And he had been arrested and charged with the sexual molestation of 3 very young girls. In 1974, he was charged with attempted murder on a 6-year-old little girl, but was only put on probation.
What?
He tried to grab her and she ran, and when he caught up with her, he tried to strangle her.
And he was only put on probation.
Mm-hmm.
That is so messed up.
A couple of years later was when he attacked and sexually molested the other 2 girls, and that was in 1976.
And then again, didn't go to jail?
So at this time, he was evaluated, and after this incident, he did go to prison. And in prison, he got chemically castrated.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, there's that.
Okay.
So when law enforcement arrived at Grabowski's apartment, he was not there, but he had left a note for his fiance saying that he wanted to meet her at his favorite bar in town. So police met him there instead and arrested him on the spot. Which, like, did he think she wasn't going to go tell police? Because, like,
I know. Like, she comes home, discovers this, and then leaves. Where do you think she's going?
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm glad he was stupid enough to
leave the
write
note
down where he was leaving. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Grabowski claimed to police that Anna tried to seduce him and extort money for him, threatening to tell her mother that he had touched her.
Are you fucking
kidding me? A 7-year-old little girl.
Mm-hmm. A 7-year-old girl did not seduce you.
No. It's impossible.
Shut up.
That's yeah.
Disgusting. Stop.
Mm-hmm. He claimed that he was afraid of returning to prison and, out of fear, killed her.
Yeah, okay. That's going to stop. It's going to prevent you from returning to prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When police notified Marianne, they were shocked by her response. She did not want to talk to police, nor did she want to identify her daughter's body.
Oh my gosh.
To add insult to injury, Marianne experienced tremendous guilt.
Yeah.
Guilt for the argument she had had with her sweet daughter the day before, and guilt for thinking about telling her daughter, or about letting her daughter potentially go live with another family.
Oh, I'm tearing up. That's so sad. Like, not only are you hit with grief, but guilt for, like, that argument and... Oh.
One of the articles I read said that, like, she would spend weeks in her apartment and she would not leave. And then another thing said that she would, like, literally, just have a meltdown in public and just, like, fall to the ground. Like, oh, wailing.
I mean, understandable, but wow.
Yeah. Marianne had been through more than her fair share of trauma and misfortune during her life. Mm. In every other situation, she was able to pull herself out of the trenches, but this, the death of her child, would be impossible. And she sank into an extreme depression.
Yeah.
During the trial, it was brought to light that Anna spent a lot of time on her own. Anna had been raised by the streets, essentially, and the defense tried to paint her mother as neglectful. Marianne sat in the front row of the courtroom each day, and her anger continued to grow.
Yeah, to hear that, on top of being at your daughter's murder trial, hearing them try to
make it out like it was your fault somehow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's awful.
Yep. She sat and listened to the gruesome details of her daughter's death, and she was reminded of her own sexual abuse and trauma over the years, so I'm sure that was difficult in of itself.
Yeah.
Separately, you know?
Yeah.
On the second day of the trial, Grabowski's defense team argued he had acted out of a hormonal imbalance from the hormone therapy he had been taking to try to reverse the chemical castration he had received.
Oh, I'm so angry. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
It's like, good try, but fuck all the way off over there.
Yeah. And even if he was, he still did this. Like, it doesn't matter. What
we all have chemical imbalances, okay? And we're not out doing these horrible things to children. Like, fuck off. Grasping at straws, to say the least.
Imagine lawyers that have to defend criminals. Like,
I wouldn't do it. I could not have a good conscience about it. There's no amount of money that would make me want to go to bat for these kind of people.
Yeah, because, like, you have to do shit like that that mm-hmm. is so morally wrong.
They're your client. Yeah, they are your client. They are your responsibility. They are paying you. Somebody's paying you to represent this fool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
3 days into Grabowski's trial, Marianne entered the courtroom, pulled out her .22 caliber Beretta from her purse, and shot at her daughter's murderer 8 times.
Wow.
7 of those shots hit him, and he was killed instantly.
Wow.
So the way because some of the articles I read, I had to, like, translate because they were in German.
Okay.
But the way I, like, visualize what happened is, like, she was – and actually, there is a TikTok video of this.
Oh, my gosh.
Of her. You don't see him in the video, but it's her pulling out the gun and shooting him.
It's an actual video of her?
Yeah. It's pretty powerful because at first I was like – is this a reenactment? But it's not. It's her. It's definitely her. but he's sitting down and she shoots him. So he kind of slumps forward on the desk and then he slumps over and falls into the floor and is instantly dead.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
After she fired the gun, she was heard saying, quote, "I wanted to kill him. He killed my daughter. I wanted to shoot him in the face, but I shot him in the back. I hope he's dead."
Wow.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mary Ann did not resist arrest, and she was taken away instantly. Anna's father, Christian, was actually in the courtroom that day, and he was heard saying, "She did it. She really did it."
Wow.
Yeah. So it made me wonder if, like, she was like, "I'm about to go up in this motherfucker, and I'm about to kill this motherfucker, and just watch."
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what she did.
Yeah.
The news received massive public attention, as I'm sure that you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And the events of Grabowski's death hit the media like an explosion. The public, even back in the 70s, shared their opinions and their support for Mary Ann.
Yeah.
And soon, I honestly can say I don't know if I would do this exact same in this, like, this setting.
Yeah.
But do not fuck with my children, like, point blank and period. And soon the public dubbed her Germany's revenge mother.
Wow.
Which I'm sure it sounds like way cooler in German.
Probably, yeah.
So on November 2nd, 1982, Mary Ann stood in court charged with the murder of Klaus Grabowski. The prosecution ended up dropping the murder charge. And after 28 days of negotiation, she was convicted on March 2nd, 1983, by the Circuit Court Chamber of District Court for manslaughter.
Okay, wow.
And charged for unlawful possession of a firearm and sentenced to 6 years in prison.
Good.
But she only served three.
Heck yes. I mean, I definitely think that everyone should have to pay for what they do if they kill someone,
mm-hmm.
like, unless it's self-defense. But I consider this almost a form of self-defense in some ways because of the mental turmoil she was in. But she still had to pay. She still had to spend time in prison. And I think that that's a perfectly fair amount of time.
I do, too. I would gladly spend 3 to 6 years in prison for something like this.
Yeah.
In 1985, Mary Ann married, and in 1988, her and her husband moved to Lagos, Nigeria.
Oh, wow.
And he was working as a teacher there.
Nice.
So they lived in a German camp, and her husband taught German, or he taught at a German school.
That's cool.
Unfortunately, in 1990, the two did divorce, and Mary Ann moved to Sicily.
Okay.
Then she was diagnosed with cancer, and she returned to her home in Germany. I know. And at the age of 46, she did pass away from her pancreatic cancer in the hospital.
That's so sad.
On September 17th, 1996.
Aww.
Yeah.
At least she gets to be with her daughter.
I know. And she actually was buried in the same grave as her daughter.
Oh my God. I'm gonna cry.
I know. I know. And that is the revenge mother of Germany. And I just, this story is just so wild and so impactful. And it's just, her life as a whole was just so unfair.
Yeah.
She was just dealt one horrible tragedy after the other. And, you know, sometimes it happens like that. And I don't know why, but she definitely was a stronger person for it. Definitely everything that happened to her in her life, like, she did not take any shit from anybody. And like you said, I feel like that was her way of defending herself and her child.
Yeah.
And she did what needed to be done. And I stand behind her, and I hope that her soul is resting peacefully right with her daughter.
Yeah, me too. I agree with you. Like, it's, I don't blame her. Like, I can't. That's such a, I mean, already somebody killing your daughter, but then the way the trial went and having to listen to all of that, like, it just, it doesn't surprise me that she reached her breaking point.
And she knew she would pay for her crimes. I mean, she was in the public. She was in the courtroom. So she was prepared for that. And that takes a very strong-minded, strong-willed person.
Yeah. Like you said, she didn't resist arrest or anything. Like, she, that was just what she needed to do. And I think that that's totally fair.
And it's so sad that, you know, Anna was the only thing she really had, like, the only person she really had in her life. And, she was just ripped away from her. And to feel so hopeless that you had to do that. Like, I can't imagine being put in that predicament. I know, it really is. It really is a heartbreaking case.
Yeah. Wow.
But I will be sharing photos of Marianne for sure. And like I said, she's a beautiful woman. And, you know, despite everything that she experienced in her life, I feel like she did what she had to do to survive.
Yeah, and absolutely.
But that is all I have for you guys today. Thank you guys so much for listening and hanging out with us. And we will catch up with you guys on Thursday with a brand new episode. And until then, keep it human.
Bye.